Good morning, South Florida. Welcome to another chapter of Saints and Sinners Unplugged. I am Pastor Ken Jones of Glendale Baptist Church, and I am joined by our co-hosts and colleagues and dear friends and brothers, Pastor David Menendez, Pastor Aldo Leon, and Pastor Jose Prado. I know it seems like it's been a while, but in our last few discussions, we've talked about important terms relative to understanding what the gospel is and by implication what the gospel is not. And so we want to continue that discussion, and I want to frame it with three particular terms. So let's just kind of go over those terms and give everybody a heads up of where we're going to be going over the next few weeks. After we complete that, we'll talk about the practical implications of those terms, of knowing what they are, so that we can avoid those things that are negative and be clear in what we are or where we stand in terms of understanding the gospel and proclaiming it. So the terms that I want to look at are legalism, antinomianism, and neonomianism. Now, I would tend to think that most of our listeners are probably familiar with legalism, and they may, depending on how or the circles they travel in, they may have heard the term antinomianism, but most are probably not familiar with neonomianism. So let's begin by giving a brief definition or a working definition or description of each of these three terms, in terms of what they actually mean, and then we will camp in each one and just sort of unpack it. So let's begin. Somebody give me a good working definition of legalism.
We're going to go with a practical definition. We're going to say that it's basing our relationship with God through the keeping of law. So that would be like a practical definition of what it is.
Okay. And we're going to come back and unpack that one and deal with it in great detail in a moment. So that's a good place to start. Legalism is a means of seeking to be justified before God on the basis of keeping the law.
Yes.
Okay. Antinomianism.
A rejection of the oughtness of the Christian faith.
Okay. Well, let's break it down first in terms of its etymology. What is the actual word itself?
Anti, in place of, instead of.
Or against.
Or against. Mm-hmm. Nomos, law. So basically, it's a rejection, being against law, which we say is the oughtness, the righteousness character of God, the righteous character of God, by extension.
The oughtness of human conduct.
The oughtness of human,
Okay. So legalism, in broad terms, would be defined as seeking to be justified before God on the basis of keeping his law. Antinomianism would be to have a religion that or a version of Christianity that is against what God has revealed as the oughtness of human conduct. Okay, what about neonomianism? And again, looking at the construction of the word itself, the prefix neo means new, like neo soul. You know, it's new. Nomos meaning law, so new law. So with legalism, it's seeking to be justified on the basis of the law. Antinomianism is to be against the law, and then neonomianism would be the creation of new laws. So would we be in agreement on that? Would that be a good succinct definition, working definition of those three terms?
Yes.
Okay. Now, let's begin then to unpack legalism. Now, I want to go out on a limb here and suggest that one of the probably most misused terms, other than antinomianism, which we're going to get to, is legalism. So if I'm correct on this, in other words, in my experience, I hear people throwing the charge of being legalistic, and of course the biblical poster child of legalism would be Pharisee. Would you agree with that?
That's right.
And I hear people claiming others to be legalists in ways that just simply aren't the case. So what are some of the misrepresentations of that term?
I think that some of the misrepresentations of that term is that a lot of folks would think if you if you point them to any sort of God's law, they would label you a legalist. The problem with the Pharisees is not that they wanted to obey God's law. Mm-hmm. The problem with the Pharisees is that they thought themselves to be justified through the obedience of God's law. So a legalist is not necessarily someone who desires to obey God's law. A legalist is someone who thinks that his obedience is what, you know, counts him justified before God.
Well, and even in areas where, I mean, I hear the term legalist thrown up when it doesn't even deal with matters of the law. For instance, if your church sings hymns, or if the minister happens to wear a suit or a robe, then people are quick to say, they're a bunch of legalists over there. I mean, do you hear that? Or, you know, do you see people taking that position?
Some sort of an adherence to certain codes, or structure, liturgy.
Right.
Something that, you know, we sort of feel awkward or different about.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we knock it down. Legalism.
And granted, some of the, because those are observations and criticisms or critiques, and whether they are founded or not, isn't it going a bit far to say that because, let's say in this church, you require anyone to preach, which I would prefer, anyone to preach in our pulpit, I would prefer if you wear at least a tie. Is that being a legalist? Mm-hmm.
It's being uptight.
Man. It's been. Yeah.
It definitely needs qualification. It can be, and honestly, it could be legalistic wearing a t-shirt and jeans.
Yes,
it's not enough to stop it. Like,
well, yeah, but if we just get back to the basic term itself, and that's why we wanted to begin with definition. Yeah. Definition of a legalist is one who seeks to be justified on the basis of the law.
That's right.
So to say that as a pastor of a church, I prefer that if anyone preaches in this church, that you wear a tie. Is that now? That I'm not saying that every man that enters into the sanctuary must wear a tie.
So that's a stylistic. That's a preferential. That's a particular. That's a preference.
Yeah, it's a preference. So, okay. but even and again,
so how would that become legalistic, too?
Right, and that's, I think that's what I find among a lot of evangelicals, mm-hmm. that they throw the term around loosely because of a dogmatic position or because of a personal preference in this particular local community, and it's such a huge category. In the Bible, we can look at some passages where legalism really is the issue. And so to say that because whether it's, you know, attire or whether it's style of songs or music or even the Lord's Day. I mean, there are raging debates in churches as to whether or not you should have a second service or whether or not a Sunday is a proper day of worship. And I think there is a way in which those arguments can be grounded in legalism. But even if those positions are held rather strongly and you disagree with them, which we have a right to do, it's wrong to call a dogmatic position legalism.
But would you say that a dogmatic position makes it a matter not of preference, but of right and wrong?
That's what you end up doing.
And then that crosses into legalism.
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's possible.
How's this for a definition? I'm looking at this verse here in Romans 10, 2. And I'm wondering, you know, for I bear them witness that they have a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. I'm wondering if the legalist is one that has a zeal for God. There's a lot of zeal to the point of being dogmatic about different issues, but not according to knowledge, which would be not according to real law, which a legalist then, I'm wondering if it could be defined as a pseudo law. In other words, it's not just that he is a legalist, meaning that he's standing strongly on law. No, he's standing strongly on a false understanding of law.
Would that not, though, sort of be the bridge into neo-nomianism, the creation of new laws? And certainly the legalism of the Pharisees, as you mentioned, opened the door for new laws.
They distorted the law.
Yes.
And that's why maybe there are bridges and there are connections here. That's why I think at heart, and that's where they, in other words, if we discern them spiritually, the diagnosis is you have a zeal for God, but it's not according to knowledge. It's not, in other words, the law that you profess to teach others, when you teach others, you're not teaching the law, you're teaching your own definition and distortion of the law.
Absolutely.
So you become dogmatic on something of your own creation. So by extension, I'm wondering if when I say hymnody and psalm singing is the dogma, if that qualifies in a sense for having a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge.
Well, and I guess to be a legalist would be therefore to say, because you don't wear a tie, you are wrong.
Yeah.
And therefore, I could not preach in your church, or I can't preach without a tie.
Your zeal for God and your worship of God is tied, no pun intended, in the tie.
Right, in the tie. Well, and I mentioned that. I mean,
or the lack there.
I was invited to preach at a church somewhere else, and the brother told me, well, we don't preach in ties. I just, he said a black shirt with no tie. So I went out and got a black shirt.
You know, you have to get a tattoo if you preach at Albert's church.
There you go. There you go. Which crosses over into legalism. So the assumption would be the other side of that coin would have to be that if my preference becomes the standard, and if I'm outside of that circle, if I'm outside of the place where I ordinarily minister, then I can't preach without this. I do think that becomes neo-nomianism, which is itself an offshoot of legalism.
I found it interesting that Jose, when he gave his definition, he used, I'm trying to think of the words he used, but he didn't use the specificity that you use in terms of when one seeks to justify himself by the keeping of the law. He used when one bases his relationship with God on the basis of law, and I'm wondering, and I could see, I can see the specificity of what you're saying. Jose also, I think, was trying to get at, but I'm wondering if now these examples that we have alluded to, if when we have a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge, if somehow at the root of which leads us into examples like the ones we've talked about, we're seeking to validate ourselves somehow in our Christian faith, maybe not just to be saved necessarily.
That's right.
But there's some other aspect of our spirituality that we're seeking to validate.
Yes.
By a zeal, but it's not according to knowledge. Yes, and I could see how that leads over into neo-nomianism.
You are neo-nomian. Yeah.
Neo-nomianism, but at the heart, it's a sense of legalism in the sense that you're validating yourself by some type of law of your own.
But I think that we all have some sort of legalism.
So I'm wondering if you would allow for this broader, perhaps, wiggle room to, or I think what I'm hearing from you, Ken, is that then would fall under the category more specifically of neo-nomianism?
Yes, technically, however, and I totally agree with you that strict, genuine legalism is the breeding ground for neo-nomianism. You can't separate them. Where there is one, generally there will be the other.
But theologically speaking, we're not just saying intellectually, academically speaking. Right? Mm-hmm. Let's just make that straight. Isn't that the missing of what the law of God truly is? If you miss what the law of God truly is, let me put it this way. If you understand what the law of God is, you're not going to live by law, right?
Well, if you understand
truly what the law of God is and this by the Spirit is applied to your life, you're not going to live by law. You're going to want to be living by grace. But if you don't understand it, the default position to that is you're going to live by a law of your own making.
And isn't
which would
that
be
exactly,
legalism and neo-nomianism at the same time.
But isn't that exactly the danger of legalism? Is that if you are seeking to be to have a right standing before God based on your performance of what he requires, isn't it because essentially you have too low of a view of what God requires or too high a view of yourself?
Exactly. That's the point, that I don't think the Pharisee is actually seeking to stand before God on the basis of what he requires, but actually on his own distortion of what he thinks God requires, because he doesn't know the law of God.
Yes, but if you were to ask him, he would begin with what God has required in the letter of the law.
True.
But isn't that the worst kind, because you're living in the deception that you think you have kept the law? And it goes back to the rich young ruler. When Jesus says, he asks the question, what do I have to do to inherit the kingdom? And what does he say? He says, well, what does the law say? And the rich young ruler says, oh, I've done that. So there's the deception.
Yes.
Number one, if you think you can be justified by the keeping of the law, you have too low of a view of the law. And that's number one. And number two, you have too high of a view of yourself.
That's right.
So both of those things are inherently true if one seeks to be justified by the law. I think this is what Jesus is demonstrating in his Sermon on the Mount, which is why I always cringe when I hear people nakedly say that the Sermon on the Law is actually gospel. It's not gospel. It's actually a legal demonstration. Now, I know... Aldo, you spent time in Southern California, and you know what it's like to drive on the Harbor Freeway going north, and you see the mountains on a clear day, and it seems like if you drive for another 5 minutes, you'll be right there. But in actuality, those mountains are much further away than they appear. And if you're in downtown Los Angeles and you try to drive towards those mountains, you're going to be driving for another 2 hours or so. You have heard it said, thou shalt not kill. So everyone who has no blood on their hands, who has not physically, actually taken the life of another human being, says, okay, well, I've kept that one. And then Jesus says, but I say that if you are angry with your brother without a cause, then you are guilty of murder. So that shows, and I think his intent there is to show that by physically restraining from taking another person's life is not the full keeping of that law. That law itself entails so many other things. So legalism is to assume that one has or can keep God's law, and God is therefore going to reward you for it. Well, let me give it to you in even more reductionistic terms, when people are quick to say, well, I might not be perfect, but God knows my heart.
Yeah.
Right?
That's not good.
Yeah. Right. But isn't that legalism? Because the assumption
says your heart
is
deceitful.
Let's start there. What the Lord
says.
So
that would
about
be, I guess, the pagan's way or version of legalism, right?
Well, I'm not even talking about pagans. I'm talking about church folk a lot of religious people are quick to say that they will own up to not loving their neighbor as they ought. But, you know, I know I may not have said it in the right way or done the right thing, but the Lord knows my heart.
Sure.
Well, here's the problem of the law. What the law requires, it requires at the level of thought, word, and deed, number one. And number two, the law, if it's properly understood, would reveal what your heart really is. See, part of the deception that we get with legalism, anyone who thinks that they have a right standing before God on the basis of obedience, is, like I said, we think too highly of ourselves. We think that our heart is better than our actions.
Yeah. And the alternative is, no, it's about having the right affection. It's like, no, it's not.
Right.
Affections or behaviors, whatever it is, whatever, however you quantify or qualify some sort of provoking of God's favor, unlocking of it, condition, it's the same thing, whether it's right feelings or right actions. There can't be nothing outside of a mediator, a substitute, meritorious or justifying or anything.
And how do we know? How do we know that? Again, because of the law that, you know, gives the knowledge of sin. And the 10th commandment, it forbids at the level of desire.
Which is interesting because James says it's at the level of desire that that sin begins.
Yeah, James chapter 4, it's almost as if he dives and goes from the surface and then he does some bottom, diving. And he gets to chapter 4 and he says it's at the level of your heart.
Yes. The one thing the legalist thinks that the law can actually, that it can make us right before God.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that in a few episodes later when we talk about the misconception that people have of more law. Because we think that even on a natural level, that when there is corruption, when there's sin or whatever, that all you need are tougher laws and that'll clean things up.
The theological point that I was trying to make is that at the root level, all, regardless of what category they fit under, they're trying to escape the true law of God.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Anyone who begins by seeking to be justified by the law of God based on their own performance, it invariably leads to the creation of new laws, which becomes neo-nomianism. And that's a way of sort of, categorizing our compliance to what God requires to a whole different level. So can you give me some examples or give our listeners some examples of new laws? I have a few in my mind, but I want to hear what you guys think are some of the new laws that might start in a good place, and even sometimes even logically, but where they end is it becomes a new standard outside of what God himself has already revealed.
Thou shalt not drink alcohol.
You took one off my list.
And I think that's top because we know the dangers of alcohol addiction.
Let's just get some Puritan books up.
In other words, that's one that, you know, you would say on the surface, there's so much merit to adhering to that because of all the dangers and all the knowledge of with addiction issues and all of that, and people that just touch alcohol one time and then they get hooked on it, and others that don't seem to have a problem with it. Mm-hmm. So it would seem like it makes a lot of sense logically, morally, spiritually.
Right.
But yet it's not
exactly
a law.
Yes. Well, and I'm going to throw in there, what about smoking?
There you go. Same thing.
Is smoking forbidden by God?
Causes cancer. Why
are
you doing that?
Yeah, and every time people would say that in California, I'd say, well, breathing Los Angeles air is just about as unhealthy as smoking a cigarette is.
And you need steak every day too, right?
I like the temple argument.
Temple.
Like, every person I know that says the act of smoking is inherently sinful, trashes their body with sundaes and sodas and McDonald's.
Yes, right.
But you picking on the homie with the cigarette, that's not fair.
Right.
Your body's a temple. You better be consistent with that.
Well, it takes longer.
Yeah.
You become diabetic maybe by the time you're 50 or 60.
Yeah, and so as they're preaching that sermon, well, it defiles the temple. They turn on the microwave and warm up yesterday's food. Well, that's about all the time that we have today. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to being with you next week on Saints and Sinners Unplugged.